This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
While the world's focus is on carbon dioxide, a group of powerful scientists have written an urgent letter to the directors of five U.S. government agencies. More than 21 scientists wrote the letter on July 29, 2014. It's just now surfacing in public, brought to my attention by Paul Beckwith. The scientists worry the American government, like other governments around the world, is not paying attention to the big risks posed by methane. That's methane from the Arctic, as you've heard about on this program, but also methane from gas fracking and other sources. Robert Howarth warned us about the gas fracking part years ago. One of the lead agents behind this letter is Anna Moritz, known as Mickey. She's a legal fellow at the Center for Biological Diversity. Mickey Moritz, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks, Alex.
This letter is one of those rare, historic, and extraordinary warnings from scientists to top levels of government. How did it come about?
We've been concerned about methane for quite a while, and when we read the IPCC most recent assessment, that's the International Panel on Climate Change, and we saw that the methane global warming potentials had changed greatly from previous assessments. We started watching what government was doing, and we noticed that government was not responding to this latest report from top international climate scientists.
Well, it's always surprised me the impact of methane is generally measured over 100 years. While the gas doesn't stay in the atmosphere anywhere near that long, why do governments continue to use an unreal measurement?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with historical practice. Carbon dioxide, which is the standard of one on which everything else is based, has a half lifetime in the atmosphere of about 100 years. So I think that was the starting point. But as the most recent IPCC assessment indicates, there really is no scientific basis for using 100 years. And in fact, as the scientists who wrote this letter all really strongly feel, we need to be thinking on shorter timelines because climate change is happening so rapidly. We have maybe a decade, maybe 20 years before we start facing some catastrophic consequences. So we need to think about how gases will affect our climate in that short-term time period.
How are methane levels measured in Europe? Do you know?
I believe that they also use a 100-year global warming potential, so it's still stuck in this long time scale thinking, but I am not positive of that.
Okay, well, I'll check it out, and I'll put something in my blog about that. I'm seeing quite different measurements for methane in the short term. The current agreement seems to be about 86 times the amount that carbon dioxide would be, but other scientists say it could well be over 100 or maybe even 150 for a short time, just a couple of years. How can we set a standard for such a changeable gas?
Well, again, I think that there needs to be a consideration of the timeline over which you're interested in analyzing the gas. So if you're talking about what's going to happen in a decade, then you should be using about a 10-year global warming potential. But if you're saying what's going to happen in 20 years, what do we need to do in 20 years to stop the worst effects of climate change, then you would want to use the 20-year global warming potential.
I think the worry that's been expressed by a couple of scientists that I've talked to is that even if it only happens, like you get a burst of warming for 2 or 3 years, that could tip the system into other changes that we haven't really looked at. So even a couple of years could be important if we got a burst of methane from some source.
Yes.
All right. Well, I'm betting most Americans, and perhaps even a few of my listeners, do not realize methane is the second most powerful agent forcing climate change, topped only by carbon dioxide. Why has it been so ignored, do you think?
That is a really good question. I think, for one thing, it's really easy if we can get people behind one gas. So we all got focused on carbon dioxide to start with because it is the one that there's the most carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. And I believe it really is changing now. People are beginning to realize that even though there is so much carbon dioxide, the immediate effects of climate change can only be addressed through short-lived pollutants. That is, greenhouse gases and other climate forcers that stay in the atmosphere for just a short time, maybe a decade, some like black carbon only for a week. And so if we can get our focus back to these climate pollutants that remain just a short time in the atmosphere, it's really important because this is the time that if we make a change in these pollutants, we can actually reduce warming within a time period to stop those worst climate consequences. So carbon dioxide has been important and continues to be for a long-term perspective. Over the long term, we need to stabilize climate change, and that's going to require, absolutely require, reduces in carbon dioxide. But if we wait for that long-term change, we may, in the meantime, as you just mentioned, cross over some critical tipping points. So we need to also think about the short term and what can we do with the short-lived climate pollutants. And I think this is part of the reason why the Obama administration did put out its methane strategy, realizing that there has to be some immediate action and immediate response.
Well, according to the EPA, 60% of methane comes directly from human activity, things like our meat industry, rice growing, and the newest addition, the gas fracking industry. If we are doing it, does that mean we have options to control methane levels?
Absolutely. And I started working on this back in, 2007. And the reason we were so excited about methane then was that it was a way to avoid catastrophic consequences in the Arctic, and it was easy to implement. So at the time, the U.S. was considering various climate legislation for carbon dioxide, and we were really pushing that methane would be a lot easier to deal with because, first of all, there are just a few industries. You named the main ones right there. It's not everybody in their cars. It's a few industries, and it's much easier to implement changes for an industry than it is for individual citizens. And second, because natural gas is primarily composed of methane, it's worth money. So saving methane in some form, whether you're capturing it or whether you're stopping it from leaking from your natural gas system, is actually either going to save you money or you can then sell it for energy and as a company make a little money. So there are many mitigation options that are actually either cost neutral and sometimes even a cost benefit to implement.
There's plenty of names of scientists that I recognize who signed on to this letter, of people like Drew Schindel, Michael Mann, and Michael McCracken. And we also find Robert Howarth, J. David Hughes, and Anthony Engraffia, and I know them as almost campaigning scientists trying to awaken the public to greenhouse gas impacts of fracking. Is that a serious part of the methane problem now?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think natural gas and fracking together need to be reconsidered in light of what the most recent science says about the importance of methane pollution, because we know that fracking actually releases more methane than conventional natural gas methods. So if we are underestimating methane, which we currently are, which the government and agencies are drastically underestimating, we are handicapping ourselves in assessing whether or not we should be moving forward with natural gas and moving forward with fracking. This is particularly important given that the EPA is currently considering its clean power plan for CO2 and other greenhouse gas emissions from electricity sector in the United States. And one of the main things that EPA is looking at is replacing coal with natural gas, but we need to be assessing methane emissions from natural gas systems, including fracking, in order to properly estimate what is the benefit of this clean power plan. And this is particularly essential when we consider that if we take the wrong path now, it's going to be really hard to reverse this in the near future. So this is our moment. This is our time when if we take the right step and set ourselves on the right kind of energy structure as a nation, we can really either make a difference for the benefit of the country or to the detriment.
Well, there's another story happening here with methane, and that is in the Arctic, where the levels are rising up there due to the extraordinary heat, and that's due to climate change. There's grave risks of melting clathrates, as cited by Dr. Shakova. Our recent guest, Paul Beckwith, talked about that, and other scientists with the Arctic Methane Emergency Group, known as AMEG. Did the scientists you worked with talk about the Arctic methane problem?
I know that they are all aware of it and very concerned about it. We did not discuss specifically how do we work the release of methane from the Arctic into this letter, but we certainly are all thinking about this and not only the release of methane from permafrost or methane clathrates, but overall the loss of sea ice, the loss of Greenland's ice sheet. All of this is occurring because of that rapid heating in the Arctic. The Arctic is heating twice the rate as the rest of the world. So again, what do we do? Well, we need to act quickly. And the only way that we can act quickly is to reduce the short-lived pollutants like methane and black carbon.
And you mentioned the changes in the Arctic sea ice, and I noticed the letter does reference recent science from Jennifer Francis at Rutgers and echoed by the independent research from Potsdam Institute. They say the loss of Arctic sea ice may be driving the truly strange weather we've experienced in recent years here in North America, but also in the UK and the rest of Europe. Was there controversy about including that in this warning letter?
None of the scientists who signed on had any concern with including that.
Well, I think that says a lot, because those are some big names in climate science. I know the AMEC scientists have been complaining for years about using the outdated 100-year global warming potential. Is there some resistance to moving the standard to meet current science? And if so, where does that resistance come from?
I think there's a dual reason why it's very difficult to get movement from agencies or from the administration. The first is that the Environmental Protection Agency, EPA, which is the agency that oversees our greenhouse gas inventory, uses IPCC standards for international reporting. So there's an agreed upon standard for all countries that are a party to the UNFCCC. And that is by default what EPA uses when it's reporting its greenhouse gas inventory for our nation. The problem is that this agreed-upon standard was agreed to in the 1990s. So science has changed dramatically since then. We have requested in this letter that EPA continue to use the international reporting standards for its international purposes, but to adopt a new value, the most recent value, the best supported value for domestic purposes. And this isn't hard to do. EPA, and in fact, in its inventory, calculated methane using a couple of different methane global warming potential values, although it never used the most recent value. So it would be easy enough to do, but it's just a matter of getting this habit going for the agencies and telling them it's okay to use two different values, one internationally and one domestically. The other problem is that if we as a country decide to use the most updated value, it will appear that we have more greenhouse gas pollution. And so when we are trying to show that we're moving toward meeting our goal under the Copenhagen Accord, it's very difficult to do that if we recalculate correctly to show that we're actually emitting more greenhouse gas pollution than we previously calculated.
Well, it may be inconvenient, but I think the truth is the best way to go when we're dealing with climate change. You're tuned to Radio EcoShock. I'm your host, Alex Smith, talking with Mickey Moritz from the Center for Biological Diversity. The topic is the world's number two climate change gas, methane, also known as natural gas. Mickey, paradoxically, we talked about the EPA. They're using a chart on their site saying methane emissions from the United States have actually gone down a little in the 12 years from 1990 to 2012, but they don't post more recent information, which could include fracking. And Radio EcoShock guest Scott Miller from Harvard was part of a group of scientists that found real methane emissions in the atmosphere are at least 50% greater than EPA calculations. I should explain, the EPA used a ground-up figure trying to add up the gas wells, the wetlands, the cows. But these scientists flew in the air and measured what's really up there. It almost seems to me like the agency doesn't want to know or is stuck in the past, as you suggested. Can this letter give them a push in the right direction?
We certainly hope so. We have not heard any response, but we're hoping that the agencies that received the letter are really seriously considering all of the arguments that the scientists who signed on have made.
So you haven't had any official feedback or replies yet?
Not yet.
How difficult would it be to bring these methane standards? You've touched on that. What has to happen?
It would not be too difficult. It would take the agency deciding that this was going to be an updated value. They would probably need to do a rulemaking, as it's called, to publish what the new value would be and take input on that, but it's not tough to do. They do it all the time. In fact, just recently, the EPA released a rule for some fluorinated climate pollutants and used the most updated values from the most recent IPCC assessment. So we know that they're open to using these values in some cases, and we'd like them to do the same for methane.
How do you rate the chances the Obama administration will really act on methane before his term is up?
I think that there will be action in terms of trying to bring awareness about sources such as landfills and natural gas. How much is actually going to happen is a big question, and I think there's a pretty small chance that there will be actually a change in the global warming potential.
Well, maybe, I mean, you raised this issue of the obligations under Copenhagen and looking bad if we raise the standards. That's really important, and I hadn't thought about that. Is there going to be a follow-up by this group of scientists or by others to get the higher standard adopted internationally, say, at the 2015 climate talks?
We have not discussed that step. I think that the thought has been if we can lead as a nation by showing that we are willing as the U.S. to domestically analyze methane in the most appropriate way and to accurately reflect the climate impacts of methane, that the international community would follow, but that we need to act first to show them that we are willing to do this.
Well, no doubt it's been an education working with such an elite group of minds. What is your personal conclusion about the threat posed by methane? Do you think it's a maybe thing? Do you think it's happening already? Could it go really big? I know you're not a climate scientist, but what is your take home on this?
As I say, I've been working on this a long time, and they call me Mickey Methane Moritz at the center because I'm really strong on we've got to deal with methane, and it is critical because, as I say, this is our chance. It's a short-lived pollutant. There are mitigation options that are economical and feasible. This is a particularly important pollutant for us to deal with now, immediately, so that we stave off the worst of climate catastrophe.
We've been talking methane and the way governments operate with a blindfold using outdated measurements that underplay the danger of this powerful greenhouse gas. Our guest is a legal fellow for the Center for Biological Diversity based in Arizona, but we reached Anna Mickey Moritz in Washington State. You can find this important letter from 21 scientists at the website biologicaldiversity.org. I'll also put a link to it in my Radio EcoShock show blog at ecoshock.info. Please read the letter for yourself to find out what scientists are trying to tell the government. Mickey Moritz, thanks for your hard work on this over the years, and thanks for joining us on Radio EcoShock.
I was happy to be here. Thank you, Alex.
I'm Alex Smith reporting.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.